Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ
106.5
FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and Mr. Michael Hawley is in the room.
That is correct, Al. How are you doing?
Well, I'm tired, but, you know, I have a reason. I was just at a week at the Left Coast Crime Convention in Seattle working. Well, you were just, what, in a week in Florida?
Yeah, you know.
Swimming and partying and drinking. So, like, this something didn't go right here.
Right. While you were on panels, I was in a hard drinks.
Yeah. And, I mean, and you are hyped. Vibrant, all ready to go, and I'm beat.
That's right. With a tan.
With a tan. There's something not fair here.
That's right.
It's just there's something wrong here. I thought I was the boss.
You are, but well, no, hey.
There's something not working right here. I'm going to have to, I don't know.
Just don't tell Douglas about how we got this deal here. So this is a great deal.
Yeah, to fix this, you know. Well, let's see. Let's get into it today. What's going on? Okay, we've got an author with us. His book coming out May 1st, Love Cake, and it's Douglas Bell. So thank you for coming on the show, Douglas.
So good to be here. So good to hang out with you guys.
Nice speaking with you, Douglas.
Yeah.
So Douglas, who are you? Like, why? And I mean this in the way of, like, this is your second book, I believe.
Yes, it is. This is the first book was Cakewalk, and so Love Cake is the continuation of Cakewalk.
Okay. So what took you from your life of what you were doing before the books and brought you into, or just helped you, let's say, get into writing these books?
So, well, you know, it really started as an investigation into retirement.
Oh.
So, yeah, so I was, you know, have started this kind of conversation with myself back in 2018. What are we going to do in retirement? And so I thought about maybe being a magician again. So back 30 years ago, I used to perform as a magician.
Wow.
yeah, exactly. That's what people know. I used to perform as a magician. And I thought about my wife asked me, well, do you want to go back to being a magician again in retirement? And I kind of said, no, that's a lot of work. Being a magician, there's a lot of muscle memory there that you would have to develop again. It's not like riding a bicycle.
So it's not like picking a card, any card.
No, it's I want to tell you now, for anybody, when you go and see a magic show and you see what is happening, the level of dedication and commitment to entertaining you that goes into that, you once you know what goes into that, you really, really have to applaud it, because that individual really sacrificed a lot to give you that entertainment, give you that performance. So, yeah, so it was kind of like, oh, I don't think I want to do that again. So then I thought about fashion. So I'm a very fashion forward person. I'm kind of known for my fashion. And so I shadowed a few tailors that I know. And I got to be honest with you, some of the men that came in to get their suits designed, they were just terrible to the tailors. Just terrible.
Really?
Yeah. So I was kind of like, no, I don't think I want to do that.
Right. It was probably Mike. You can tell us now. He was one
yeah,
of
them. So. You know, of course it was.
Yeah, so, and then I said, well, maybe I enjoy art, so maybe I can go into maybe selling art. You know, kind of like an old guy showing up to the art gallery, kind of maybe doing, you know, this wasn't supposed to be real difficult, but I started realizing once again that a lot of people said, like, these were like PhDs in art history. These people were educated. So it's kind of like, okay, you just can't show up and just start selling art. But during all of this, I was writing. And I write in a journal daily. I've been writing in a daily journal since 1990. So I'm always writing. Yeah, so I've got so many journals now that some are at my mother's house, some are here, but I've got journals everywhere.
And I hear you have 900 letters you wrote to your wife?
In the 17 years we've been together, I've written her over 900 letters. So I'm always writing.
Were they apology letters?
Well, maybe once or twice.
I was going to say 909, boy.
Yeah, maybe once or twice. But, you know, it's just to kind of just to acknowledge her and acknowledge us. Maybe even talk about what's happening next week or looking forward to this or that. But, you know, in these moments. So with that being said, I meditate every morning. I've been meditating every morning since the late, really about the mid 90s. Yes. I found my way to meditation, and a lot of that kind of inner work of sitting with yourself really allows this ability for the individual to see what they're grateful for. And that's where that comes from, because when you sit with yourself, you have the ability then for everything to get quiet. And when it gets quiet, then these types of things start to take hold and start to take root, and you start to see what you're thankful for. And so then what you really find is me going to my day job and just sitting down, writing my wife a letter. And I have a bunch of stamps in my desk, in my office, putting that in the mail and going on with my day. So with that being said, I was writing already, and I was talking to friends of mine who are trans women, some friends of mine who are trans women. And we were talking about their stories, people that I've known for a long time. And I started realizing that no one was talking about their stories, but also from the perspective of the men that they were involved with. And that's how you then get Cakewalk and Love Cake. Cakewalk being this choice of being in a relationship with this person is not going to be a cakewalk. And then in Love Cake, they actually are together. And so now you can kind of see that Cakewalk is maybe him against himself, because he's trying to understand, why am I different? Why am I attracted to her? He doesn't understand. Is he straight? Is he gay? He is strapped with all of these questions. While in Love Cake, they're together, and you can kind of say now it's them against the world.
So you mean like prejudice and social norms that are different?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
He is running not only into societal, like I say, norms, but also his own family constructs. His mother is extremely homophobic, but also, too, his mother only wants him dating Black girls. And she is very adamant about Black women, even successful Black women, being passed up in society once Black men become more successful. And our protagonist, our main character, Brian Hicks, he is actually a senior vice president at a oil and gas company. So he is very successful. And so it is those norms that he is fighting against regarding where to go with this relationship, because Nadia, the love interest, wants to be she wants to be courted. She wants to be romance. She wants to go places. She wants to go to dinner. She wants to be courted. And he just is struggling with, how do I do this in the face of what's in front of me? Between my job, my mother, and just society's, what society says is right or wrong.
So getting into this type of a story, how did that happen for you? Other than talking to your friends, like what, how can you write your lead character? Like, how do you find yourself getting into the mindset of your lead character in this series?
Well, I think that was pretty easy because one, he is a black person. So one, that was very easy to speak from, especially when you look at corporate America. So a successful black person navigating corporate America comes with its own course to travel. So that was very easy to write. Also to just look at my own life and to look at my relationships with the trans community and my friends and what I think life could be like if these relationships were more out and open. And so I really wanted to investigate what would that be like if these two people were put into certain circumstances. So like, for instance, in the novel, there is in Cakewalk, at least, even though we're talking about both in a lot of ways, but in Cakewalk, there is a place where they are stopped by the police. And the question of Nadia, the love interest, she passes. And when we say passing, meaning she's passing for a cisgender woman. Well, now her white privilege rises to the top over his being a black person, where before, if she was seen as a trans person, his black privilege or his privilege as a cisgender man would rise above her being a trans person. So there isn't this tussle of, does white privilege then trump this situation that you find yourself into when a police interacts with you? So these things were very easy for me to write. And then in Love Cake, there is a matter of a particular theme is about gun control. So Love Cake is written during COVID-19. It is written during the time of Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, MAGA politics. You have all of that mixed in here. And they are running this bakery in Houston, Texas, in Love Cake. And Brian, he wants to protect them. So he is torn between getting a gun. While Nadia, she comes from a family where guns were in the house. Brian comes from a family where guns were not a part of the house. And so there's this tussle then about whoever is holding a gun is perceived in a different way. And that comes out in the novel where she is learning or realizing the truth that whoever is holding the gun is either protection or a threat. And they are working through these types of things. So it's all of that. And to be honest with you, it was in a lot of ways, it was very easy to conceptualize it, to picture it, but then also put a twist in there. Because these people are more than just their, I guess, gender identity, their sexual identity. These are also just regular people just trying to be in love with each other. These are regular people just like everybody else trying to get up, go to work, pay bills, do what they got to do, who are, you know, you didn't pick up, you know, you didn't wash dishes, or I need help with this. So they have normal things that have nothing to do with their sexuality or gender identity. And that was the other thing I was really trying to show, was that let's look at these relationships and let's look at these individuals as just people who have the same concerns and same issues as all of us in terms of being good partners, in terms of getting the rent paid, in terms of even making mistakes on how we treat one another at times. So that was the other main thing, what was important to me.
Did you try to have someone that tended to dehumanize that to try to accept more? Did you try to work on that kind of that would be tough, actually.
Well, there is a character there who winds up really in a lot of ways becoming a surrogate mother for Brian. Brian's mother actually disowns him because of this choice. But the surrogate mother, I say surrogate mother, but the kind of mother figure in the story, in a lot of ways, started out not really knowing much about this, but by time you get, there is some transformation on her part too regarding supporting him.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So transgender has to do dishes.
Transgender does have to do dishes, and that's actually one of the problems in the novel. She was not helping out doing some dishes. She was not helping out in the housework.
Get to work. That's a really good thing to try and show people that we're all the same. You know, we may live somewhat differently, but we're all really the same. We have the same things going on at home and work and all that. Underneath the story, then, I would imagine both books, you have a really important subtext or a meaning or some sort of a thought or something you want the reader to get besides the storyline itself.
Exactly. I think the first thing is we've got to stop dehumanizing each other. I think that's really important. I think the second thing that's really important is that these ideal of labels, both good and bad, right and wrong, these labels come with so many connotations. And these labels, a lot of times, keep us from living authentically. And I believe that if the individual can detach from what these labels say is right or wrong, good or bad, black or white, left or right, when the individual can detach from the meanings of these labels, then I think there's room for the individual to truly accept themselves. And especially if shame is attached to these feelings and these thoughts, and if these thoughts are not hurting anyone, and if these thoughts, in a lot of ways, it's just me, it's just the way I feel, then if you can detach from the shame and the bad connotations, even the good connotations, and let it just be, I am, this is I am it. I think then that's another theme of the story, is that then maybe there is not only room for empathy for one another, but then there's also room to just find some contentment and who you are. I think that's one thing. But then I think the next thing is that I'm also trying to offer that I believe this life is a spiritual journey. And I believe by finding your spiritual journey, prayer, meditation, you could even say yoga, which in a lot of ways is a spiritual practice, or was at one time. Now, you know, you have people putting a goat on their back, you know, for that. That I don't think that is what was intended around yoga, but... But I think to start, for me at least, especially as a practicing Buddhist, to start a meditation practice to support this journey is one thing that both books are getting to. Or if you already have a spiritual practice, it then is also asking you to strengthen that spiritual practice in this journey that we are on. Because I think through these spiritual practices, you then are tapping into what is already inside of you. When you hear people say, you know, well, God will never give you anything more than what you can't handle. Well, a lot of times we're not aware of that because we're moving so fast and we're going here and we're going there. And sometimes you just have to slow down and stop and let the universe just talk to you. And when you do that, then these sayings and these adages that you can handle it, and that you're okay, and that you are perfect and you are fine, you then will hear it. And then maybe you can lessen your worries. So these are some of the things that I feel like, especially in Cakewalk, the main character had to start sitting with himself in order to start seeing the bigger picture on who he was and what he was capable of, and that he could handle it, and that he could love her authentically, and he could be a good partner, he could be by her side, but he had to go through all of this.
So what is your relationship with your characters? And I mean this in, do you hear their voices, or do you see them like watching a movie when you're doing dialogue, or do you consider them like family, friends, or is it something else?
Well, that's a great question, because I think I'm no different maybe than a lot of writers in the sense that these characters are maybe an amalgamation of a bunch of people, but definitely. I am definitely friends with the main character, Brian. Brian is me, and I am Brian in a lot of ways. I was really trying to, my main character, I wanted to be in a place of privilege, because the person who, in each relationship, there is a person of privilege, man to woman, immigrant to a native born, cis to trans, LGBT to straight. There is privilege in these relationships. So I'm purposely choosing the perspective of the privilege, because that is the person, one, who does not have to change, but it is the person who has the room for the most change. Because then, with doing that, that then sets us up for allyship of one another. So to come back to your question, I am in a place of privilege to where the transformation for someone like me is extremely important for the marginalized communities in front of me, not just trans, not just LGBTQ+, but other Black people, immigrants, women. So we've all have to find that courage to stand up for one another. But then Nadia, the main interest, the love interest. Yes, these are women I know. Brian's mother. I'm not going to necessarily say it was my mother, but these are older women. These are older women that I do know. So yes, I am very connected to these characters in terms of like family.
Yeah. Do you hear the voices then?
I do, and I act everything out as well. You know, some days I feel like I should have became an actor.
Right, right.
But instead I got an engineering degree.
I was going to say, but do they still let you have a driver's license?
Starting to talk to yourself while you're walking down the streets and stuff.
Acting it out.
I do. I like to act it out. So in every place, I'll stand up and I'll act it out, and I'll kind of say, okay, so what would this person do in that place? So I try to take on all the people involved. I try to take on all their roles and see what they would do.
So your audience is probably more on the privileged side than the marginalized side. Would you agree? And that's kind of where you're writing it from, or? Is that one of the reasons why you're starting from the privileged side?
I am hoping that more and more from the privileged side will see these novels. It is definitely written for the trans specifically, but the LGBTQ plus community to be seen, but to be seen by someone else's eyes, not necessarily. I mean, they've been telling their stories. And in today's world, there are more opportunities for all of them to tell their stories. Where I'm coming from is maybe wanting to tell their stories and other stories from a place where someone could not say, so like, for instance, someone may say, well, I don't know any Black people. Well, this book actually, you know, in that context, is not written from, well, I guess this one is written from a Black perspective, but my point I'm getting to is that for persons, well, I don't know a gay person.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I don't know a black person. I don't know a such and such. Well, they're not telling the story. The person of privilege or the person who is telling the story could possibly be you. And so I'm hoping for that reason the privileged person will pick up this book. But I also realized, too, there was a quote by James Baldwin that says, in order to fix something or to change something, you have to face it, but you've got to be willing to face it. I think a lot of the privileged community now has to face that these communities are just as human as the rest of us. I think that's what is forcing you to face.
Now, Dale, are you also kind of addressing within the communities themselves, their own sense of, titling different people, you know, different names within their own community and within its own sort of hierarchy, you know, just like you have cisgender and white as compared to, trans and black or something else, right? So there's different, you know, like you say, different privileges, but within the community itself, the LGBTQ, there's also a privilege in a sense too, and within that community, just like all communities, is there sort of an address to that as well?
Not really, and I say not really, one, because I don't identify as LGBTQ+. I do feel like I do identify as an ally. I think saying an advocate is too much, too far, but definitely an ally. So I hate to answer that question from the standpoint because I don't identify that way. But I'll say this, and I say this more with a question, not with a statement. I would have to believe there is some level of privilege for a white gay man than a black trans woman.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that's sort of what I was thinking. Yeah. I was thinking, so within the story itself, do you do that within, because within the community itself, there's things like that, just like you said.
Yes, we do. Yeah. And you know, that intersectionality cannot be avoided. I think if you were to avoid, like, for instance, the black part of being trans or the black part of being gay or the black part of being in corporate America, you can't, if you were to not, it doesn't mean you have to make it the center thing, but to avoid it altogether and not acknowledge it, then for the people who are experiencing this, they're going to feel that something is missing. And so to answer your point, Alan, I have addressed, or I have touched on through the conversations and the interactions, definitely that there are hierarchies and level of privilege within that, but not so much because I identify as LGBTQ+, but more just simply because there's enough research and information out there to support that this is a much tougher go for a immigrant trans woman than a privileged white gay male, or even maybe just a white gay male. I don't have to say privileged, but just a white gay man.
Right. There's advantages. Yes.
It's got to be.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It comes without saying. It just is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you've chosen a very, let's say, touchy areas in life to be talking about in a book at these particular touchy times. Because right now, you know, with the MAGA and with the, you know, just God, everything, politics and TikTok and everything. And you've got everybody is openly angry at everyone. And there's a lot of stuff going on. So you kind of chosen area to write in that is very, I don't know, it's a hot spot, right? I mean, because when you're talking about there's, you know, people suggesting transgenders, that negativity toward children, and there's all that stuff going on, and there's like the MAGA and the LG, you know, there's so much just, right. You know, stuff like that. Are you, let's say, I don't want to say worried, but are you a little bit, well, in a way, it could be worried in the sense that because people are so left and right, they're just going to look at this and go off liberal trash. You know what I mean? Yes, they're just going to, oh, yeah, yes, he's just like one of these, yeah, one of you, yeah. Who cares? So, I mean, how do you kind of get around that? Because you do want, I would think that you do want those people to read the book, or one of them, and to understand the point of the books, hopefully. Some people anyway, right? But it's a tough sell these days right now.
Right. I'll say this. One, I think for the person who has a hard line on the humanity of others, that book, these books are not for them. And it's not meant to be. I think where maybe I, to your point, have some concern is that I am really trying to address the humanity of the individuals, not necessarily the right or wrong of it. Now, I am in favor of the rightness that there's nothing wrong with these relationships. But what I really want people to see is that we have got to put more empathy into how we answer a question or how we deal with a problem. So it doesn't mean you have to agree. It doesn't even mean you really have to do anything differently. What it does mean is how you do it differently or how you disagree. Can you disagree in a more empathetic way? Can you disagree in a way that doesn't dehumanize the individual? So with that being said, for the individual that is on the fence, who has never even thought about the fact that a cisgender straight guy would be attracted to a trans woman. And that has come up. I have had several readers write me and say, it is just no way that this straight guy would be attracted to a trans woman. And that's not true. That is not true. And so once you see this and you're facing it and you're kind of like, oh, this is different. What I want that person who's on the fence to go is to say to themselves, okay, I don't really understand it, but boy, the main character has got to treat that person better. The main character cannot lie like that because he's too scared to tell his mama. That is the humanity of it, that you have acknowledged that that person has to act better. Yes, that doesn't necessarily mean that something is right or wrong or what. It doesn't even necessarily mean you agree. But we are saying that you cannot treat someone, you cannot even someone you don't know or care about, but someone you say you care about, you cannot treat them that way. That is just basic human decency.
Yeah, just basic human respect.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think if we can get to that, then people can look at this story and say to themselves, well, is this how people are being treated? You know, regardless of the fact that maybe I never thought about these two people being together, but if these two people, if these relationships are really going on, okay, we can't stand for that. you've got to treat that person better than this. And that's why I say, so in love, Kate, he gets there, you know, but he had to do work. I mean, in Lovecake, he gets there, so he had to do the work in Cakewalk. But in Lovecake, where they're together, now it is people on the outside looking at them. And now you're asking people on the outside to look at them to say, okay, I never considered this couple, but they look happy. You know what? Let them be.
No, let's make them unhappy. Come on.
You know? Come on. And so that's what I'm asking of people, to say, hey, these two people are happy. They're contributing to society. They're not hurting anybody. Let these two individuals.
So Douglas, to me, this is such a you know, just what Al was talking about, such a hotbed right now, mm-hmm. such an intense mission that you're on. It almost seems like that was the first thing before you decided you want to write about it. But sounds like did you want to be a writer first, or attack this issue, or how does that work? Are you going to go to other issues, or what? Are you going to go to something easier after this?
That's a great question. Okay. So, you know, here's, once again, this is a whole learning curve for me. I do consider myself a debut author. True enough, this is my second book, but I am new to publishing. So what I ended up doing, because there were a number of people who didn't know what to do with this story. You know, for some people, since I don't identify as LGBTQ+, they were kind of feeling like, I can't support this story, or I can't dig into this story because you don't identify with the community. But then you have other people who are saying, well, I can't take on this book because it's really a gay story. So what I decided then is that, you know what, in today's world, you are able to self-publish. So I formed my own publishing company, Bumbershoot Press. And the mission of Bumbershoot Press, Bumbershoot is an umbrella, but the mission of Bumbershoot Press is to produce literary fiction under the umbrella of advocating for human decency for us all. So with that being said, I am now writing my next novel, and my next novel now we'll get into bail reform and prison reform.
Oh, okay.
So I chose something even harder because I have never been to prison, and I have never been I have never been in jail, but yet so many of us, particularly Black males, have been in prison. And this is going to be, once again, written from the place of privilege, because just like these other two stories, we bring so many stereotypes and labels and ideas and thoughts to these relationships, whether these relationships are someone cutting you off in traffic, or whether it's a 20-year relationship with someone you've known, you know, for 20 years. You're bringing all of this to the relationship. So what I really want to do, once again, is to find where we are. I want to find ways to bridge these gaps of human decency to this person who's a felon.
So some people retire and go to Florida for vacation, but some people really get into it. So this is really impressive.
Yeah, you know, once again, I am privileged, and I'm in a privileged place to where I can stop and take this time. I do an incredible amount of community service work here in Houston. I serve on a number of nonprofit boards. I am constantly meeting people who are marginalized, and I think I have a responsibility because of how fortunate I am to figure out where I can bridge the gap. Who do I know? How can I help? How can I be of service? And that is what I'm really trying to get to here, is the heart of what is going on. How can we be more in service of one another, as well as telling an entertaining story? Because in Love Cake, once again, they have this bakery. All kinds of things are happening in the bakery.
I bet. okay, so each one of these, they're very, there's a lot of meaning to it. It seems like you put a lot into it. And I don't know, how long did it take you to write each one of these, roughly?
So Cakewalk took 3 years. About half of that was editing. And then Love Cake took 2 years. A year and a half. I learned a lot. I'm a very quick study. I am very fortunate to have, actually, I have PhDs in creative writing with my editing. They are not only helping me with my editing, but they are also good teachers as well. So I am a very good student in terms of learning what to do. And I felt like I was able to leverage that in Love Cake from Cakewalk, which cut down the time in which it needed to be written. But then also, too, my willingness or my desire to become better at this, at the craft of writing, at the craft of storytelling, because it's one thing my wife always says, I can tell a good story. And when I was a magician, performing as a magician, in a lot of ways, you're telling a story. You're just using magic as the vehicle to do it. Where here we're using literature to tell a story. So this desire to want to be a better writer is fueling this passion to do what I need to do to become a better writer and listen and learn and, you know, sit back and ask questions and don't assume that I know everything, because I don't. I've just started doing this. You know?
It gets better each time you go, mm-hmm. you know. But when you put so much time and so much of, it means so much to you, when you go through the process, I would say, of not only one, but now you've done two of these books, how do you think this process of each of these books has changed you, or what's happened to you from going through this, right? Because in a way, you're living through your characters the whole time you're writing, you know. You've got them in your head, the voice, you're going through the scenarios of what they must go through, and some of it's very, you know, traumatic in places,
right.
I'm sure.
Right.
So you absorb all that. It's almost like you're living it, and you go through that for, you know, a number of years. How did you turn out? What happened to you? No.
Well, to be honest with you, I actually think it has made me a better person and a stronger person too. I think you're totally right that I am living through these characters. And here's what I mean by that. In the beginning of all of this, my empathy was quiet. It was maybe more internal. It was more mental. But that empathy now is a actualization of more compassion in the world. But then also too, through that, I have found the courage to actually be seen on behalf of other people. And that is difficult. That is where the real challenge is, because we all want to be in community. And to possibly put yourself in a place to where you are getting kicked out of community. And what is community? Community is your group of Black male friends, your family, who maybe you may have said, well, Cousin Joe, such and such and such and such. But now it's kind of like, Cousin Joe, you can't do that. Well, what do you mean I can't do that? Well, you can't say that. That's not the way that works. Now you're finding the courage to actually step up and be seen. And I can't really say, for as much as community work that I do here in Houston, I can't necessarily say that I have really stepped up in such a outward and open way to be seen. But what it has done now, it has told me, or it has informed me, that I have the courage to be seen. And that, I think, is a wonderful thing that has come out of this whole experience, is that it's to inform people really what matters to me. It's actually being said out loud now that, You can't take her humanity away, or you shouldn't. She just wants to live her life like anybody else. And this guy who she comes across and has fallen in love with her, because you won't let him be, he can't love her authentically. Just let them be. They're not bothering anybody.
Wow. There you go. Says it all, doesn't it? Listen, so are you doing social media, website? You have a lot of things set up that you can interact with readers and people or something like that. So what are the places people can come find?
And that is a great question, because I have really had to change and grow there, Alan. I mean, this whole social media thing, it just has ran me over. But I now have a YouTube channel, which is the username at Douglas Bell Author. And there I am interviewing artists who are working at the intersection of art, social justice, and the human spirit, is what I'm calling it. So that's the kind of the brand of this YouTube channel, is telling untold stories that are at the intersection of art, social justice, and the human spirit. So we've got a YouTube channel. I also have Instagram, Facebook. I started TikTok, and they also too are at Douglas Bell Author. There's also my website where you can purchase these novels. So DouglasBellBooks.com. And then we now got it uploaded to Amazon as well.
Well, fantastic. Of course, we're going to put all of that up on our website as well, so people can find you and hopefully give you some good feedback.
Yes.
You know, get enough of this negativity around
here. Get enough of this negativity around here. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because it is.
Yeah, Michael's got to stop it.
Hey. But that makes you look better, Alan.
That's right. That's what you're here for. Pump me up. Well, we appreciate you on. We appreciate the books and all your work. And, of course, Love Cake is the new one, mm-hmm. the second one that comes out on May 1st mm-hmm. of this year. Mm-hmm. And the author's our guest, Douglas Bell. What can I say? Thank you very much.
No, thank you for having me. This has been a wonderful opportunity. I think you two are the best, in the sense that you're giving authors like myself who are trying to be impactful, but also want to tell entertaining stories. You're giving us a chance to be seen, and I applaud that because it also means you're stepping out and supporting all these different types of stories and perspectives, and you're giving a platform for all of us to rise, to evolve to hopefully a better place. So I want to tell you all, thank you. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I do. I love doing it. It's what it's all about.
Yes.
This has been a production of the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our show, guests, or hosts, go to our website at houseofmysteryradio.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.